The masters almost surely have a plan. There's clearly maybe something there beyond the realm of man. And until you've thoroughly tested every last close trusted view, I find the more you think you know, the less you really do.
That's true, Dr. Zaius.
Very well.
Where would we be without THC? Cause we know they're lying to us, just don't know.
How's it going, Higher Side Chatters? Anyone who swam in the deep end of the weird pool has inevitably come across stories of aliens, UFOs, and secret military bases in the southwestern United States. Whether it be crashed saucers near Roswell, secret underground otherworldly battles at Dulce, or a doomsday safe haven for the elite underneath the Denver airport, the western frontier is ripe with weirdness. This we know. And many of us who have dug into the archives of early America have also found plenty of confirmation that giants once walked these lands, with evidence in dozens and dozens of newspaper reports and Native American legends that state the same. Well, the fun thing about today's show is we're not going over these same old stories. In fact, we're doing a complete geographical 180, because while everyone has their conspiracy spotlight shining on the New Mexico desert, they're missing all the sweet, sweet, similar secretive stuff going on in the polar opposite part of the country, the mountains of North Carolina. And while giants tend to dominate the narrative of strange ancient humanoids, there are lesser discussed legends of little people living in that same Carolina area. And lucky for us, today's guest Mary Joyce is a longtime journalist and author who has written several books, but among them are two we're planning on detailing today, Cherokee Little People Were Real and Underground Military Bases Hidden in the North Carolina Mountains. She also is the editor of the website Skyships Over Cashiers, which details the UFO activity in the area and more. It's an honor and a pleasure. Mary Joyce, welcome to the Higher Side.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be on your show. Thank you.
Yeah, this is really exciting. So often we hear the same old stories from the same old places, but I'm looking forward to something new. Let's kick this off maybe talking about the area in general as a hotbed for strangeness. How did you come to recognize all this stuff going on in the Carolina region? What were some of the first oddities that you noticed once you moved into the area?
Well, I moved here in 1998, and I lived just south of the Smoky Mountain National Park, if that gives people an idea of the geography. And so there's mountains everywhere. And the job that I had for quite a number of years, I kept meeting very, very interesting people. So initially, some of the stories started just by talking to people where I worked. And through them, I began to find out about Cherokee little people that lived here in the mountains, about giants, about underground facilities, about UFOs. Eventually, it inspired a website that we started in 2008, which you have mentioned already. It's called Skyships Over Cashiers. And we deal with those kind of subjects and many other subjects that the regular media just simply doesn't cover.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so weird that there is such a Pandora's box of strangeness there. But let's get into the military bases maybe to start, because these secret facilities, they always intrigue me. Can you tell us how many you've uncovered in that area and where they might be?
All right. I've done a book. I did it a year ago. And the long title is Underground Military Bases Hidden in North Carolina Mountains. And I've featured five different facilities here in the mountains. The one that anybody in the country would be familiar with would be the Smoky Mountain National Park. And there is one that's beneath there. It's one of the more recent ones because people have gotten photos that I have been able to acquire from basically 2012, where, you know, major equipment is being dropped from the air to this site where we know the entrance is. Our best witnesses have had military background, so they're able to identify, you know, machine guns and helicopters and transport planes, and they know a lot that the average witness or eyewitness wouldn't know. So they're very credible witnesses that I've been able to quote in the book.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the Smoky Mountain National Park having a facility under there. There's also one, I believe, Mount Mitchell. Is that a separate facility?
Yes. Some people believe, and there's evidence that it might be true, that these various facilities beneath the mountains here in North Carolina are all connected by underground tunnels and transportation portals, you might say.
Hmm.
So they're not adjacent to each other, but they're not that far apart. And Mount Mitchell is the tallest mountain east of the Mississippi, and there is a large facility beneath that. And again, we had a military person who was a key witness in giving us information about that.
Hmm. And do we know how deep any of these facilities are? Have any of the witnesses been able to disclose that kind of info?
Yes, there's quite a variety. The first facility that I learned about was called the Perry Astronomical Research Institute. It's gone back to the days of the Cold War, and supposedly they've transformed it into just an educational astronomy place, but we have people with high security clearance who say that it's a facility that's city size, it's six stories deep, it's totally self-sufficient, has electricity, water, roadways, and we hear that with most of these. So they're extensive. They're not just like a little bunker. The one that is the biggest seems to be beneath Mount Mitchell, and that is supposedly 20 stories deep from the top of the mountain.
Wow. I mean, that's huge. And I've also got a note here, apparently, that this Mount Mitchell facility might be controlled or at least facilitating UN troops.
This is one of the things that has puzzled me since I first moved to the mountains again in 1998. And people would periodically talk about foreign troops being in the mountains around here. And it always puzzled me why that was even permitted. And I found out that in 1972, our country, when Nixon was president, signed the World Heritage Treaty. And when we did that, we actually turned over parcels of our land to the United Nations. Mount Mitchell is one of those. The Smoky Mountain National Park is one of those. So even though it's in our country, and even though our taxes may support the facilities there for tourists, it's still owned by the UN. And that can explain why they have free rein of places like Mount Mitchell. Around here, they're known as blue hats.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting. I did not know much about the World Heritage Treaty at all, but apparently the northwestern Hawaiian Islands, which is 140,000 square miles, went under UN jurisdiction in 2010. Then in 2014, the monumental earthworks of Poverty Point, Louisiana was added. And since then, several more things have been added. Does this concern you? What do you think the implications are of this? Why is this happening?
It goes beyond our country, and I find it rather creepy that the UN is having control over so many places around the world. 140,000 acres is no small thing. Personally, I think we made a mistake. The motivation originally was just to protect natural resources like the islands, like Mount Mitchell, but it's being used for, military causes that our country doesn't even have control over. So I wish it didn't exist. I wish we could unsign it.
Well, I think it says a lot that these bases, wherever in the country we're talking about, are considered to be under national parks, because driving through some of these areas, you look at the way the country has been run, how the elite operate with this extreme capitalist mindset, completely all right with destroying the earth. And I've often looked at these places, these tens of thousands of square acres, and I'm kind of impressed that we haven't just harvested it all and put in some suburbs. It's pretty amazing we've resisted the temptation and greed, you know, but the altruism kind of falls apart when you consider the reason these areas might be largely blocked off from civilization is so they can conceal operations underground more than anything else.
Yeah, I can give you another one. One of the bases that I've written about in the book is at Sugarloaf Mountain. Well, Sugarloaf Mountain is near almost adjacent to Chimney Rock Park, which is another park where tourists like to go. And since I first began doing that research, they've even acquired more land as a buffer between the entrance that we know about, which is at the top of the Sugarloaf Mountain, and the Chimney Rock Park. So it's a buffer that keeps people away from it. Mm. And they seem to do this a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Just to insulate it and keep people off of the property. And they also do things that, keep people away from even wanting to go there. When I was investigating things that were going on at Mount Mitchell, I found it on Google Maps, and it was a hexagon shape that looked a lot like entrances to other facilities we'd seen. and also looked a lot like, well, anyhow, we'll leave it at that. And when I went back to try to, you know, get the map up again, when I would type in this location, it wouldn't come up. And the only way you can find it, it was at the end of a road. Let's see if I can remember the name. It was like Wart Wilson Road, which is a terrible sounding name. Mm-hmm. And when I would type that in, suddenly instead of getting the map like I had been able to do the first few times, I got connections to Walmarts. I got connections to wart removal products. And so just on memory, I started searching from other points and eventually found where this hexagon shape was in the ground, and it was all covered up. It had been airbrushed out, so it looked like there were trees there now. So there were signs all around that place when I went there on foot telling you not to trespass and, you know, very threatening signs. And so they do everything they can to keep people away from these places.
Hmm. Yeah, one interesting testimony I had written down here that's, you know, kind of in that vein is one of your witnesses said that one day some friends of ours drove ATVs on the one-way section of Hentuga Road from the hatchery of Big Cove Road in Cherokee. After they'd ridden 3 or 4 miles up the road, they were stopped by park rangers who were carrying either M4s or AR-15 machine guns. I mean, what are park rangers doing with machine guns?
Right. You just really, really have to wonder. Part of that same story, well, I can share more of that because that even gets expanded.
Sure.
These two gentlemen that worked at the fish hatchery, which would be like at the bottom of the mountain, and at the top of the mountain, there's this road called Hentuga Road. I'm sure it's an old Indian name. And that is the closest point to the entrance to this underground facility. And so the water stopped flowing like it should from, you know, the tributary into the fish hatchery. So these two guys started going up the creek to find out if beavers or something had stopped the flow of the water. And they eventually found that the tributary or the source of the water at the top of the mountain was all dried up. Not only was it all dried up, but there was a 50,000-gallon water tank mostly buried where that reservoir had been, and there were pipes going from that tank down into the ground. So the water was being siphoned off and funneled into the ground. So that had to be a source of water for what was being and maybe continuing to be built under the Smoky Mountain National Park. That's the most lively one because there was a lot of activity going on, especially in 2012, 2013, with major drops by military. Osprey, sky cranes, you know, big, huge cargo transport planes, and they literally would airdrop major, what they call packages, down into the area where this entrance would be. There's been a lot of things that have been seen.
Yeah.
There's also been things felt from beneath the ground. People hear sounds. They hear grinding. They hear like industrial pounding. And there's no explanation for it other than something's going on beneath the ground.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you mentioned those airdrops. There's a picture you have in the book of a cargo plane carrying like a Humvee. And that's just so crazy that they would need that in the, you know, mountainous areas of North Carolina. But if we're talking about incentives for people to not go there, you know, intimidating signs, intimidating Mounties with machine guns. Apparently, you've also talked about this people repellent they seem to be using to keep people away.
That I've experienced myself. I've gotten real close to the Perry facility, which is the Pisgah Astronomical Research Institute. And I've been there with each time with other people. And the closer you get to it, it's like you feel, I don't even know how to describe it, but it's like this vibration in your head. And it's not pleasant. And it makes you want to get out of there. And then we had another military witness who went up to take pictures of a monument that's near Hentuga Road, which is back to the Smoky Mountain National Park. And she said the birds were singing on the way up there. The sun was shining. It was a beautiful day. And as she got close to this place, all the birds stopped singing. She began to feel, you know, sensations in her head. She began to feel nauseous. And that's what I mean by a people repellent. It seems to be an electronic vibration that's sent out that repels the animals and people just because it's not pleasant.
Yeah, that's so wild. But we have heard people talk about that stuff before. Now, this Pisgah Astronomical Research Institute, this is pretty interesting. And I've heard you talk about it before, saying that it's an invite-only astronomical kind of research facility. Have you been able to talk to any astronomers or any scientists who've been able to get invites there?
It's very strange. Sometimes you can walk in the door and there's not a problem. And some people have experienced that. Some days people have been at the gate and there has been somebody dressed in a SWAT suit at the entrance. And so it may depend totally on what's going on. Sometimes we'll see UFOs, you know, flying low near that facility or flying into a lake that's near it. Sometimes you see military vehicles in the town that's closest to it, but technically there's no base in the area. There should be no reason that they're there. It's used as a camouflage. They say that this astronomical facility is that's all it is. But, you know, we think of it very much as a cover-up. We call it a capstone cover-up because, you know, it's not what it appears to be.
Hmm. And can you tell us about some of the UFOs that have been sighted around there? Are they classical shapes? Are they anything abnormal from what's typically reported in UFO 101?
Well, let me get back to the name of the website. We initially named it skyshipsovercachers.com because we were getting some pretty incredible information and photos over that mountain ridge. And as the crow flies, that's not that far from Perry. So if you're talking about different kinds of spaceships, we have seen incredible ones. We've seen your typical saucer ones. We've seen those that look like rotating rainbow colors. We've seen them diamond-shaped. The most unusual one, and we've only been able to get pictures of this, I think, on one or two occasions, they actually look like big rocks, almost like volcanic rocks, but they're UFOs.
In the sky.
And that's the only time we've ever experienced that. And they're hovering there. So it's not like it's a meteorite or something flying across the sky. And since we've had the website for so many years now, I can't necessarily tell you exactly where to go. But in the archives of Skyship photos, those pictures are there. Oh, I think it was last year, but there may still be some from this year.
Wow, asteroid-looking crafts. Do you think these in any way could be perhaps hologram tests, like the floating cities we've seen, or the rumors of blue beam technology, or you think these were actual ships?
I think those would probably be something actual, because if they're going to do holograms, I think they're going to try to broadcast something that people will instantly recognize as a UFO. So I don't think that particular one would have been a hologram. Now, I know that hologram technology is being used. So, I mean, I'm not dismissing that. But people have seen some of these go right into the lake. And so you just, you know, most of them have got to be real.
Well, yeah, sure. Strange ships that come out of the water or seem to come out of the base of mountains are talked about all the time in ufology. But I'm starting to think that there might be something even weirder going on in the UFO realm than just aliens. But kudos for you for bringing to light some areas that are just really off the radar. And it's where you got to look, because other sites and locations are just too overblown. But people seeing all sorts of UFOs in the sky, that's definitely noteworthy. But assuming this tech might be beyond human hands, have any people reported interactions with the potential pilots of these crafts or any beings that might be related to them?
Let's see. I don't know exactly how to answer that. For the most part, no. We do have one witness who lives up in Cashers and has seen quite a few of them. And she did have someone that looked like they were dressed in a maroon spacesuit that briefly appeared in her house. And she's had a UFO hover over her backyard. So that most likely would be an interdimensional being making its appearance.
Mm-hmm. So we kind of mentioned that these things are under the national parks. Do you find this suspicious at all? Because there are people like David Politis talking about disappearances in the parks. Do you think there's any conjunction with that? Are there a lot of missing people cases in these areas?
That's something that I haven't investigated in a big way, but I do have a new angle on it. We did a story rather recently. We were contacted by a man in eastern Tennessee, and he said that he had little people living on his land, and he sounded very credible on the phone, so we followed through on it and went to visit him. And that story in and of itself gets rather elaborate, but he has about 200 acres on a river in rolling mountain type country, and his family goes back 200 years at least, and the little people have always lived on his land. His own lineage is back to the Uchi Indians, who, believe it or not, are actually white people who fled Ireland back in, 2250 BC when there was a major flood there. We just found out this recently from a major researcher. And these Irish people fled to many places just to get out of the flood. And some of them ended up in Savannah, Georgia. Then they would take the river up to the more mountain area. And as a tribe, they pretty much have disappeared because they look so much like regular Western people. Now, when you think about it, the Irish have always talked about the little people.
Yeah.
Well, this researcher who, I won't get into credentials right now, but the person has good credentials, maybe some of those little people came with them because there was this bond between the original Uchi Indians and these little people. And this man that invited us there had some Uchi blood, and he, his father, his grandfather, all could communicate with the little people. And when I went there, I had my camera, of course, and we found evidence of the little people. So the little people say that there is a race of aliens that are very evil, and that they actually eat people. And that is like a nourishment that this particular group of ETs call the earth the farm or the ranch.
Ooh.
I know, isn't that creepy? And they like 2-year-olds. They like little people. I guess they're more tasty. And so the little people on this man's land are very, very afraid of them. So that might be a very unusual possible explanation for the unusual number of disappearances that Paul talks about.
Wow. So these aliens that feed on us, were they described at all? Are they reptilian? Are they the grays?
They seem to be, well, they're creepy. I haven't seen one. The description that was given to us by the little people is that they look kind of like a cross between reptilian and dinosaurs. And they're very large. And they call them the dominators. That's what the little people call them.
Wow.
And I know. I mean, this gets into such deep craziness that you just go, I can't believe this. But, you know, I was able to get pictures of the little people footprints. Was able to, we could go off in a whole direction on that. Mm-hmm. So you decide where you want to go with this conversation. I've got more conversation than will fit in your hour.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I do find it intriguing when people talk about reptilians that if you look at our past, we had a planet dominated by large reptiles. Is it super implausible that there could be some type of intelligent humanoid form of that? We live in a world dominated by mammals today, and yet here we are, intelligent mammals of some type. So I find those kind of stories really interesting.
Well, there's certainly evidence all over the country that's been found about giants. There's been several books that have come out in very recent years exposing the Smithsonian, because there are all sorts of stories in old newspapers going back to like the 1800s talking about giant skeletons that they found, and they would give them to the Smithsonian thinking that was the smartest place that for them to be sent. And then they kind of disappeared into the closets at the Smithsonian, and it's like they didn't exist. People say it's because the idea of giants disrupts the ongoing history that's taught to all of us.
Mm-hmm.
But there's been so much evidence that, they clearly existed.
Yeah, I've had researchers talk about the idea that a lot of things happened in ancient America that we aren't aware of, and that when they're building things like even shopping malls or museums or universities, they purposely place these things in areas that will obscure or completely cover up and level ancient sites or any sites that give us clues to what was here before us, because no one's ever going to move a shopping mall or a university. So if you can get it over one of these places, I mean, you're never going to see it again. And I'm kind of curious. I wonder if that kind of thing really does happen or how widespread it is.
It continues to go on, but sometimes for just monetary reasons. One of the people that is in the construction business, he was preparing land for a major, I can't identify the building, but let's say a major enterprise. And when they cut into the side of the mountain, they found five of the little people tunnels. And they quickly were instructed to cover them up and keep digging because they didn't want the project to be stopped, because technically, if there's an archaeological find, it has to be stopped until an archaeologist can get in there and, you know, examine what's being found.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a very common reason for things to be plowed over, just pure monetary reasons.
Right. Yeah. Who knows how many times, a contractor has said, you know what, let's just pretend we didn't see that, because they're going to have all this red tape. They're going to bring everybody down here. So, I mean, there's so many different levels of incentivization to not disclose some kind of really anomalous find like that. It's pretty sad.
And it's not just pure monetary situations. There's a university here called Western Carolina University, which is in the same general area where all these things are being found. And I focused on it in my book, Cherokee Little People Were Real. And what happened in that case is the university didn't want to stop expanding and building buildings. So they would, you know, try to keep this hush hush. And one of the interesting stories that's come out since I did the book, I got a letter from a man who had been a student there. And he said one day he and some of his buddies were just down by the river, and they saw the head of security for the university coming by with a box he described as a little bit bigger than a shoebox. And somehow they got into a conversation with this man. And he said, oh, it's bones that they found when they were, you know, digging this particular site. And he was taking them to rebury them on an old ATV trail. So that was another example of ancient knowledge being covered up for, you know, real human reasons.
Right. Man, I definitely think that's fascinating. I plan to get into a little more of the little people stuff here in a minute, but I guess one other question about these underground bases is, have you heard any reports, if we don't have a whole lot of interaction with aliens in the area or massive abductions other than these beings that might be eating us, have you heard any testimony of non-human entities operating in these underground bases in the same way we've heard stories of Dulce?
The simple answer is no. I don't know why we do not hear abduction stories here. If they're going on, we're not hearing about them. I did have a witness who, as a young man, worked at a Christmas tree farm near the Perry Center. And the people that worked at the tree farm sometimes saw them carry in caged animals into this facility. Now, at one time, this was a defense operation during the Cold War, and now it's passed off as an astronomy educational place. Why would animals in cages be taken into such a place? From one of the witnesses, who again at one point had high security clearance, said that there are experiments of that kind going on. Now, whether people are being involved in this, we just don't hear about it, I do not know. The closest I can come to it is one of the witnesses worked for social services or of some kind. And he would get occasionally cases of, let's see, what do you call it, satanic ritual abuse cases. And when these cases would come up, the state FBI would get involved. They would come in and his whole case would be taken away from him and everybody would be shut up about it. So that was happening in the little town that's closest to the Perry facility. So maybe there are human experimentations going on, but we only have those kind of indirect indications that that might be the case.
Right, right. Yeah, obviously they're going to keep that stuff pretty tight-lipped, but hearing even just an anecdote about caged animals being taken in there is really interesting, and you can extrapolate quite a bit from that.
They also, the same people at the tree farm also saw them sometimes digging pits out in the land around the facility, and you have to wonder why.
Yeah, and you mentioned satanic ritual abuse. These things all seem to come together in many, many cases. And I've heard you say you don't really like to get into the dark and creepy, but there's plenty of indications.
That there's dark and creepy, yes.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, government experiments with the occult, that seems to be a big thing, especially a few decades ago. And having this connection to UFOs, it seems strange that, again, you know, the term satanic ritual abuse comes up in one of these areas where there's secret government facilities and UFOs. And it just seems like a paranormal soup that always comes together.
And it's possible that the same things aren't going on at every facility.
Right.
Like we, from my own research, I can only speak to the Perry Center. I haven't heard stories like that associated with the Smoky Mountain National Park or Mount Mitchell or Sugarloaf Mountain, or even there's a facility that's been sited in, let's see, Linville Gorge. But that's the only one where you hear the creepy side of it.
Can you tell us about the testimony of, I believe you're referring to him as Hawk?
Yes. Now, he's the man who was our key witness with the Mount Mitchell. Now, what do you want to know?
What were some of his disclosures? Because he seems to be one of the ones who's given you the most detail.
He was in the medical field. When he retired, he still had a lot of energy, and he decided that he would volunteer for the National Guard here in North Carolina in their medical unit because he had been a medic during the Vietnam War, and he also was in a related medical field. And so when he went there, they accepted him, but they put him to work doing undercover surveillance because he had FBI and Army intelligence clearance. And so he's the one who ended up with a squad of men, a small squad, surveilling Mount Mitchell. And let's see, there's so much I got to figure out how to tell it simply. At one point, he himself saw the side of the mountain open, which was big enough for tanks to go into. And he said he also saw it when it was shut. And even though he knew it was there, he could see no sign that it was there. So these the camouflage they do on some of these entrances is quite extensive.
Wow. Open, like the side of a mountain, of course, like we mentioned earlier, UFO stories coming out of the mountains. Do we know how it opens or closes? Is it like a garage door or something more sophisticated?
From what I can gather, it's kind of like a garage door.
Huh.
I don't know if it goes up on the pulleys just the way it does in your own garage, but it's along those lines. And when it's closed, it blends right in with the side of the mountain.
Hmm.
I mean, you'll find similar things, stories out in the West too, where things disappear into mountains and it's just, you know, a hidden garage door opening.
Right, right. And I also wrote down one of the quotes of testimony. It was that somebody had told you that they have an ex-military friend who now works for the National Park Service who told them they're not allowed to even ask about any of the unusual activity at the park. Did this particular witness tell you about what they might have meant when they said unusual activity? I'm sure just the things we're talking about, but anything specific they saw?
Why don't I tell your listeners about how that whole story started, because it started right off on the deep end. This man who was retired military, I had known through my own work, and so he let me know about it. And I trusted him because I'd known him long before he had experienced any of this. And he and his wife were parked, I think, at a place to get gas or a Coke or something, right at the intersection of 441 and 74, which is south of Cherokee. And while they were parked there, there was this big truck, tractor-trailer truck, and on the back of it was some very unusual equipment. He said from his experience, it looked like a decontamination chamber. And that was from what he knew. There is a picture of it in the book that I have.
Hmm.
So he's very friendly and outgoing, and he went up and talked to the driver, and she said that she was there waiting for five other trucks and their escort, and they were taking equipment to Newfound Gap Road, which connects North Carolina with Gatlinburg, Tennessee. And then from there, the equipment would be airdropped at an undisclosed location. Well, she told him quite a bit. He was very curious, so at a distance, he followed all of this. And the five other trucks arrived. They all had tarps over the equipment, all had USAF, or United States Air Force, on the tarps. And the escorts arrived. They were white SUVs, and the men in those SUVs were in black garb and had weapons. So this man that we call Clark followed this caravan, and it ended up in a place called Smokemont Campground. And as soon as all the trucks went through the gate into that campground, the gate was closed. Well, that campground is really very, very close to the entrance, which is on Hindtugi Road. So it's probably the nearest place they could transport that heavy equipment. It's also in that same direction that repeatedly people have seen these cargo planes and ospreys and sky cranes carrying large equipment.
Hmm.
So there's a lot of evidence that, you know, something very real is going on. And people will see SUVs, white usually, with plates that only have numbers on them, and they have no identifying tag on them. And they'll just be pulled off, you know, somewhere on the edge of a dirt road.
Huh. Wow. And the things you said about UN troops, I mean, that's so fascinating, the blue hats. I mean, because I've had researchers talk about the narrative that we're getting now with the police shooting things that's going on. They've said that it's all going to come to a head where they're trying to put out in the culture that the police force is not equipped to handle what's going on, or they're undertrained, or this or that, or whatever.
And they'll have to bring in these other troops.
Exactly.
All right, let's go back. Let's go back to Mount Mitchell. When Hawk was doing the observation of that area, there was another group that was at a town about just to the east of Mount Mitchell called Marion. And they were there and witnessed 20 to 25 tanks being wheeled off a train. They were loaded onto big trucks, and then they were taken up to the top of Mount Mitchell. There's only two roads, as I understand it from the witness, and those were being guarded at every point. Those tanks went up the mountain and were never seen again. The trucks were never seen again. So they disappeared into that garage door we were talking about and never came down in any conventional, fashion. He said that they were painted like the undercoating. In other words, they could be painted again. It was like the primer on them. So they, at that point, couldn't be identified as Army, UN, or whatever, but they went into that facility.
Wow. Man, it makes you wonder. It seems like these things go a little beyond the description of a typical military exercise. It seems like some type of preparation.
That's the way it sounds to me. And we had a witness who was at Cherokee tribal offices, and they were in one room, and it was adjacent to the office of the chief. Well, the walls were thin enough, and they were close enough to the wall that they could hear part of the conversation. And at this point, I can't quote it for you, but they heard these officials come in and talk to the chief and told them, explained to him what would happen if there was some kind of an emergency and how they would take him to an underground facility for his protection.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah, it seems like there's a certain class of people that have this.
They have the right to be in, right?
Exactly. Yeah, this escape plan that the rest of us just don't have.
That's correct.
And I know you've talked about people coming to you with information since writing the book about these underground bases. Is there anything that you've heard recently about these bases that's intrigued you?
Yeah, well, there's one that I haven't even started working on. I've done one taped interview. I haven't even transcribed it yet. And then I got some stuff in the mail with more information, and we have another third person. But in the area of Chimney Rock, there are major military people buying houses around there. And when I talk about major people, I'm talking about even people who are high up in the Pentagon. and they don't live there most of the time. So they're buying these really expensive homes, and I'm talking palatial mountain cabin homes with great vistas and all of that. And they're only there for just a short period of time. They don't even live there all the time. But, you know, why are so many military people living around these places? Some of these facilities, maybe not just here, but other places, will also be like adjacent to things like golf courses, where the elite can live without being really noticed. And if necessary, they could easily get into one of these facilities.
Wow. Yeah, that's interesting. You always got to look at what the people who have insider information might be doing. And that's very curious that they're all coming there.
I'm sure they're going to many other places too. But, and also Cashers and Highlands are where the rich come. They usually tend to live there in the summer months. And when it gets cold here in the mountains, they go back to Flatland. In fact, one of the people we contacted once was involved with developing the Hubble telescope. He was very old at the time we met him, but he lives up there. Carter, the former president, he is vacationed up there and has friends up there. It's a high income area.
Wow. And I'm also curious, this is kind of a detour, but I'm curious about this object that you photographed in the orbit of the sun, or in the eyesight of the sun. What is the deal? I think you're calling it the blue moon.
Okay, it's at two levels. We in our section called Skyship Photos, we have what we have called the blue moon thing, where there, no matter when it is, when we've done this over since 2009, we've taken photos, and there will be this orb that will usually be there in the middle of the day that you can catch on your camera, not with your bare eye, and sometimes it will disappear into the heart of the sun or the brightness of the sun and then pop out again. So that's one type of photo, and your listeners can find that under Skyship Photos on our website. There's another section on the website called Global Links, and that is where you'll find some of these phenomenal photos that are from satellite, NASA satellite photos. And a man from the Netherlands contacted us back in, I think it was 2013, and he was able to, what he calls, dust and clean these photos, so that you can see a lot of the detail. Well, these are monster ships that will appear around the sun. They're bigger than Jupiter, which is, you know, the biggest planet we have.
Really?
And when those shots are cleaned up, you can see the very mechanical structure of it, or of them. And I encourage people to go to the Global Links section of the website. And again, it's called skyshipsovercashers.com. And those photos began to come in, I'm pretty sure it was 2013. So 2013, 14, and 15, if you just scroll through those sections and stop at the photos that catch your eye, there's quite a few of them that we've been able to get.
Yeah, I did like the photos I saw there. Some of them are more intriguing than others, but there's definitely a couple that you're like, wow, I don't know what that could be. So I guess you're not inclined to think this is some kind of Planet X thing. This is more of a some kind of structure, some kind of man-made or being-made thing out there.
All right. Again, let's go back to just the Skyship photos, because those are the ones that people take from the Earth, not from a satellite. Mm-hmm. And it cannot be Nibiru or Planet X or Planet 12 or whatever, because a planet would not be able to pop in and out of the intensity of the central sun. It would be on a continuous orbit. And so we see this variation, and that just can't be the case. We've gotten, I think, no more than three times, we've gotten pictures where one of those orbs has orbs around it. So it looks like a giant mothership with other ships showing up around it. That's when we met the guy who was involved with the Hubble telescope, because we showed him this photo because we wanted to make sure it wasn't blown off as just a camera anomaly. And he assured us that it wasn't. He said that was not what that was. And what can I say?
Yeah.
We have more mysteries to solve than we don't.
We definitely do. And I mean, a ship the size of Jupiter, it seems even less feasible. But I guess if there's a race of beings out there that considers the Earth a farm, they have to be watching over it in some way.
Right. And we cannot assume that all of the ones in those big ships are the big evil ones. I mean, we can't do that. But I really hope your listeners will scroll through those sections and take a look at them.
Yeah, absolutely. But very awesome. Well, Mary, thanks so much for doing this. I enjoy the weird world, but I want to get away from the same old stories. So this was a lot of fun. Would you remind the people once more where they can get your books and the URL of the website before we call it in?
I sure can. The website is skyshipsovercashers.com. I have 3 books that I've written since 2013. They're all available on Amazon. There's one, Underground Military Bases Hidden in North Carolina Mountains. The second one is Cherokee Little People Were Real. The third one we haven't even talked about, a total different subject, is called Tangible Evidence of Jesus. The full long title is Tangible Evidence of Jesus Left Behind for Us to Find. And it gets into the scientific archaeological information on Jesus that you simply don't find in most places. So those are the 3 books that I have out there. And the way that I've written them is in what I call a cross between newspaper and magazine style. There's lots of photos, maps, visuals, and I write in a very concise, easy to weigh, you know, easy read. And so you don't have to wade through thick, thick tomes of information.
It definitely makes my job easier reading books for every guest, but great stuff. Mary, thanks again. Take care out there.
I enjoyed talking with you.
Oh, me too. Have a good one.
Bye-bye.
All right, fellas and ladies, Mary Joyce coming in hot with all sorts of interesting stuff. UN troops and secret bases, ETs calling the Earth a farm, knowledge of the World Heritage Treaty, Jupiter-sized ships. I mean, this is what we're dealing with in 2016, on a Tuesday, in September. You know by now that I like the idea of some type of shadowy, non-human overseer, but, well, nobody likes the idea, but it does get me all jazzed up. You know what I'm saying. There is weirdness out there. In fact, I just learned about a guy named Norman Berggren who is very accomplished in aeronautics and engineering, and he wrote a book called Ringmakers of Saturn, because when he studied Saturn's rings, he concluded that these rings are actually exhaust from ships circling the planet Saturn. It's wild, but it's super interesting in the context of the Brotherhood of Saturn, or guests who have talked about Saturn as a control center, or that some signal, perhaps the projection of the entire solar system, is coming from the hexagon-shaped North Pole of Saturn. These are out there ideas, but I like them. And I've tried to get this guy on, but last I heard he was in his late 90s, and I got no response from his website. But his book is such a limited print run that you can find copies on Amazon for over $1,000. That must mean it's true. But tie that in with John Brandenburg and the nuclear weapon signature in Mars's atmosphere, and we really got a party going. You know, if you heard the plus show of this episode where we got into the kid who has memories of fighting in the Martian army, that's another log on the fire. But anyway, I thought Mary was a solid guest, highlighted some lesser discussed topics, Cherokee little people, that's interesting to me. Who knows if we're talking about just a small humanoid race or something more mystical like leprechauns or fairies. But interestingly, a few months ago, I was in Washington State and we walked this 2-mile underground pitch black tunnel called Ape Cave, which is a lava tube carved out by a previous eruption of Mount St. Helens. It was a great experience, probably the most time I've ever spent underground in the dark. But the whole time I was looking along the ridges for some type of creature to be watching us. But I think it's a bit too touristy for that there. However, it's called Ape Cave because it is near Ape Canyon, which got its name from an alleged Bigfoot encounter in the 1920s. Here's a little on it from Wikipedia, which you know is always a bit watered down anyway. But even there, it says, Ape Canyon was reportedly the site of a violent encounter in 1924 between a group of miners and a group of ape men. These allegations were reported in the July 1924 issue of The Oregonian. Fred Beck, one of the miners, claimed that he shot and possibly killed at least one of these creatures following an attack on their cabin, during which the creatures bombarded the cabin with rocks and tried to break in. Beck detailed his claims in a 22-page booklet in which he identified the creatures as mystical beings from another dimension. He also explained that he's experienced psychic premonitions and visions his entire life, of which the ape men were only one component. And we're off to the races again, but I don't know how relevant that is, but it is cool, right? Anyway, big thanks to Mary Joyce. Check out Skyships Over Cashiers. If you like the first free hour of the interview with Mary, sign up for THC Plus to hear more and go through hours and hours of archives and all that good stuff. You know I love you. Keep your head up, your pimp hands strong, and I'll see you soon. I've done what I can. Your move, Earth Farming Entities and Secret Mountain Base Soldiers. You're fucking
lucid dreams are so vivid, cause you go to bed at 7, and your brain comes alive, cause you hate your 9 to 5. You wake up with a dread, and make sure your cats are fed. Did your brain talk to a ghost, who moved your coffee and your toast, as you listen to the Higher Side Chats? You get to your desk, and your boss says it's a mess, and your soul slowly grows to a place where nothing grows. When you think he's not around, you insert a SETI sound. The OM says turn it down, and you say it's just the Higher Side Chats. Oh, do you think you'd be invited to Bohemia Grove, to a Bilderberg Club? Oh, do you think you'd be invited by a Rothschild to a party on a submarine? Diving down to the center of the earth, through the Marianas Trench, your teeth begin to clench from the sulfurous stench. The mask you're given doesn't fit, cause you're not one of them. Starting today, you'll make plans to get away. There's no one to hold you down, and the what-ifs start to drown. Then you wake to the glare of a cold fluorescent stare, and the light winks at you, cause its life is almost through, but it's holding on to quit time just like you. It's time for the Higher Side Chats.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the first hour of the Higher Side Chats podcast with me, Greg Carlwood. If you don't know, there is a second hour to all the episodes we do around here. Generally, we're able to get a lot deeper into the topics and ideas that a guest is about, so if you enjoyed what you've heard from THC for free, consider signing up at thehighersidechatsplus.com to get the second hour of the five shows I put together each month. I never really wanted to be a paid subscriber podcast, but I really hate the idea of spending airtime promoting some product that's completely unrelated and telling you the best way to support the show is to buy an audiobook or new underwear by mail or something crazy like that. So instead, if you like the show, double your time with it for $5 a month and let's cut out all the other shit. It's half the price of a movie ticket and you get at least an extra 5 hours of show a month. Collectively, it keeps us stable and it frees me from wasting your time with anything but the show you came to listen to. It's really the only way for an independent, one-man show to make it, and I do what I can so that it's worth your while. Since we started this, I've always tried to use the subscriptions to improve the podcast and make signups more advantageous. It started with just a second hour for the main show, but now we've got a nice forum going where people can get deeper in conversation about the episodes with other listeners, submit a candidate in the guest request thread, or share their own personal projects to get out of the soul-crushing 9-to-5 cog-in-the-wheel life on the entrepreneurs thread. The forum and the plus comments are always the first places I try to go for listener engagement, but it does get harder as the show gets more popular. Because of that, there's also a direct messaging feature that you can use to reach me through the plus site also. But beyond the forum, if you like any of the music I've used for THC, most of it I've hired artists to make, and I provide it all as free downloads to Plus members too. So if you like a particular song you've heard close the show out recently, come get the MP3. I should also mention that if you don't like the idea of paying $5 recurring every month, I get that. You can buy 3 months, 6 months, or a year up front and just be done with it. I have plenty of listeners who send checks and money orders to the P.O. Box too. I try to make it as easy for people as I can, and you can read more about it on the sign-up page. Also, be sure to check out the FAQ help page on the Plus site. If you have any questions or concerns about how to listen to a password-protected show on your devices, I've highlighted a lot of great solutions, and one of those would be the iPhone app that just recently hit the Apple App Store. A super kind and talented listener made it for us, and you can use it to stream or download either the free or the plus show. If you're on Android, I'd use Pocket Casts or Podcast Addict and subscribe to the feed manually that way. I also try to throw in occasional bonus shows or Q&A shows, and I've got a few other weird ideas I might get to try out soon, but I give you all I can for $5, and I hope you'll at least give it a shot if you've listened to a few free shows and you find them unique or valuable. I know there's a lot of podcasts out there, and I'm just one of them. But if you have any questions, concerns, or comments about any of this, please get in touch with us at thehiresidechatsteam@gmail.com. I also wanted to plug the Higher Side newsletter I'm going to be putting out, totally free for anyone who wants to sign up at the main internet website for the show, thehiresidechats.com. You can also get on that email list through the Higher Side Chats Facebook page. There's a button there as well. But the reason I'm doing this is because I get tons and tons of emails after a show goes up asking me about how I feel about a particular guest or topic, and the wrap-up isn't always the best place to do that, especially if I have anything negative to say. Sometimes the dust needs to settle. Sometimes I need to hear feedback from you guys first. There are a lot of factors, but I usually have something to communicate to you, and I just don't get to do it. So on the first of the month, I plan to send out a little newsletter with my thoughts about the 5 shows the previous month and talk to you about anything else that's on my mind or that's going on. And what's probably most enticing is that I'm going to give you some insight into at least one guest I have coming up in the month, which people have been begging for some posted schedule for a long time. I personally think I'd like the surprise. But sign up for the Higher Side newsletter. It's free. It comes out on the first of the month, and I won't waste your time with any other emails. And that's it. I appreciate you listening. I try to give alternative ideas and guests a fair shake on a high-quality podcast, expose some deep-level conspiracies without the yelling, and I hope to offer some inspiration that even though the system relentlessly suggests you should follow their blueprint to mediocrity, you can do your own thing and live a much happier life despite all the negativity in the world. So go ahead and treat yourself. Isn't it about time?